also.
Next case for argument, United States v. Stewart. Ms. Christensen?
Please, the court, counsel. Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Joanna Christensen, and I represent the appellant, Kenneth Stewart, in this matter. The primary issue I'm going to be discussing today is the court's failure to make findings as to the elements of perjury to justify the obstruction of justice enhancement. The issue here, or the facts behind this issue here, is perjury before the grand jury regarding Mr. Stewart's participation with a company named Jura.
Well, what is it you think he needed to find expressly?
Expressly, the record can be read that he needed to find all three elements: the false statement, the willfulness.
Well, it clearly was a false statement.
And even that, which is from the record as a whole, probably clear. He made no findings of willful intent, which was argued by defense counsel.
Well, what's willfulness mean?
Means that he essentially meant to do it, that it wasn't through mistake.
To do it.
That he wasn't
he's
through
not,
mistake.
He's conscious. He's asked a question.
Correct.
He says, no, he's not the president of this company. How could that be unconscious?
That was not a mistake or a faulty memory is the standard for that.
He volunteered it, right? He wasn't asked that question. He volunteered that he was not an employee or officer.
He was asked if he was... He was asked if he was the owner of Jura Companies or if he had ever acted as an officer for them. And he said no, he had not, but he volunteered that he was an independent contractor for those companies. And that the testimony is outlined.
Forgotten? Okay, what's the third?
The third one, of course, is materiality. And that's the real sticking point in this case because there's no finding by either probation, which the government relies on, or the judge about materiality of this.
Well, I don't understand. Wasn't this Jura company, this was one of the companies deeply involved in the scheme?
One of
so
many companies.
So that if he were, I know there were other companies, but it was one of them. So if he was, you know, the boss and so on, that would tend to incriminate him.
It would tend to incriminate
that's
him.
Material.
But that's not necessarily materiality. Materiality is the tendency to influence an issue that's to be determined by the court, usually guilt or sentencing.
How is that different from what I said?
Because his ownership of Jura was not an issue up for the court's decision. His participation in the scheme was, as far as his guiltiness, is whether he was guilty.
Yeah, but Jura is involved in the scheme, and if he's running Jura, that makes it more likely that he's guilty. Now, that's materiality. His relation to Jira is material. Isn't that obvious?
It could be considered material. There was no finding to that, and there was so much...
Why do you need a finding for something that's obvious?
You need a finding to impose the enhancement.
I don't agree with that. If it's obvious, you say this is perjury. One way of saying, if you say this is perjury... That's shorthand for saying false, willful, and material. Now, you have to spell it out if there's some dubiety about any of those elements, but if it's perfectly obvious that they're all satisfied, then why is it an error not to have mentioned them?
Because in our opinion, it is not perfectly obvious.
Well, I think it's perfectly obvious. I still don't understand why you think that his relation to Jira could not be material.
Because it wasn't ever an issue in the rest of the
case. It's laid out directly in the memo that you submitted, your client submitted, and the government submitted. It's just they butt right up against each other, and the government exhibits 2 and 3 have Jira all through it related to various transactions. It seems to be...
Right. Jira and several others. I'm not saying
Why does the several others make any difference?
Because many other companies like Jura were involved.
Yes, but that doesn't exonerate Jura. Jura, right?
Well, the argument is not
so
that they're
irrelevant how many companies were involved. Jura is involved, and he's involved with Jura.
as it was,
was
as he admitted.
Then, so how could that not be material?
Because it didn't affect anything that the district court judge had to determine later on after grand jury proceedings. He admitted it at the change of plea. It was not an element.
I don't understand your argument at all. It was, the judge didn't have to what?
The judge didn't have to. That fact was not a factor in any other decision made in this case, in Mr. Seward's case, whether it's his guilty, whether
well,
he's guilty.
There's so much else involved, but that's still material. It doesn't have to be a finding based on. The fact that evidence is material doesn't mean it has to have, in fact, figured in the decision.
But it does have to make a difference in the case.
When he testifies, when he was testified, it was an extremely material fact. Maybe there was so much else that it never figured importantly in the ultimate decision. But that's irrelevant to materiality.
I thought your point here was that although this record would easily support a finding of perjury, false, willful, material, the district judge just skipped over those findings.
Right, Your Honor.
As Dunnigan requires, unless it is crystal clear.
That's certainly our initial point, is that there's just nothing in this record. The other comes in because we're arguing about harmless error in the end, which is the end run around.
Well, can't we assume judges know what perjury is?
When there are no findings in the record as to the elements, I'm not sure we can.
We usually assume judges know the law, especially if it's something very fundamental, like the elements of perjury.
There's a reason that this court requires those findings, is that for review, it's impossible to review a case on appeal.
No, it isn't impossible to review it, not if it's obvious.
The reason is whether Dunnigan requires it.
Correct. And Dunnigan does require it, and this court has said that when the district court...
It's a reversible error.
When the district court specifically just makes a finding regarding this was false or this was perjury, relying only on what the probation officer said, this is United States versus McGiffin, that was reversible error, that it was...
Does he challenge the probation report?
Yes, Mr. Seward did challenge the probation officer's report. He argued all three elements and provided evidence to rebut the government's evidence that he was an officer of the corporation. So it was.
I guess the difficulty I have with that is that when Judge Lindbergh says, I find that you perjured yourself, and he's referring to the grand jury testimony, that's a finding of those three elements.
And
isn't that exactly what happened in Dunnigan?
It is exactly. It's Dunnigan right there. It's just it's a conclusion rather than findings, which that's splitting hairs at this point. But in this specific situation, they're asking for an obstruction of justice enhancement because of perjury, and all he says is this is perjury. That doesn't cover the elements that this court and the Supreme Court in Dunnigan have held that district courts must find. Of course, there have been instances where harmless error comes into effect, and you can tell from the record that every one of these elements is satisfied beyond any doubt, and in this record, you just simply cannot make that decision. In McGiffin and in Seward, which is a different case from this court, the probation officer's findings, which the government now relies on, cannot substitute for the district court's independent findings. The probation officer, of course, is not a judge, and that's why the judge is required to make these findings.
Well, this probation officer didn't make any finding of willfulness or materiality.
Correct. Just made this.
I said willfulness.
I don't believe the probation officer did say willfulness. It's on page 11 of my opening brief.
Obstruction. If the defendant willfully obstructed or attempted to obstruct the investigation, increase the offense level by 2. An example of conduct that qualifies as obstruction is committing perjury.
Correct. That's a direct quote from the guideline, not a finding about this defendant's conduct.
And testified he was never an employee. Evidence supports the defendant owned and operated JIRA for the purpose of the offense.
And as we make
that's
an
argument. Obviously material.
Well, that paragraph, Your Honor, is maybe make it obvious it's a false statement. It is not obvious that it's material or that it was willful, which
but
the probation.
It's obviously material.
Well, not according to our review.
Yeah, you can argue that.
Well, because it just does not come into play at any other point during this case. It's
an
isolated. Well, it is. That's what the case law says.
When he testified before the grand jury, it was material.
And this court requires that
it
has
so much other evidence of guilt that it didn't figure that prominently in the trial.
Well, that's a harmless error for a different issue. But for this issue, obstruction of justice, it does figure quite prominently. And unless the court has any further questions, I see I'm into my rebuttal. So I will reserve the remainder of my time.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Christensen. Mr. Eaton.
May it please the court. Ken Yadin for the United States. Your Honors, the government asks that this court affirm the district court's sentence of Mr. Stewart imposing a 210-month term of imprisonment. The district court, first of all, did properly find that Mr. Stewart qualified for an enhancement for two levels for obstruction of justice under Guideline 3C1.1. The district court, in making that finding, explicitly adopted the findings of the PSR and referred specifically to, I believe it was lines 318 through 320 of the PSR, and in doing so established all three elements of perjury.
That's an extraordinary argument. Where does the district judge use the words willful or material or false?
The district judge specifically did not say those words.
Right. Okay. Where did the PSR say this was material and it was willful?
Well, the PSR sets out the standard at a 3C1.1.
And then fails to make those individual findings, right?
Well, it's the government's position that the...
The government's position seems to be that if the district judge says it's perjury, that's enough. And that's very difficult to reconcile with Dunnigan, Seward, Johnson, and a number of other cases from this court.
Well, in this case, although the court did not explicitly use those words, willfulness, falsity, or materiality, it's clear from looking at what's set out in the PSR that Mr. Stewart falsely testified by claiming that he was not an officer or employee of Gyro Development. That was willful because the evidence showed that he, in fact, owned and operated Gyro. Yes.
I understand your argument that the evidence could easily support such findings. I just don't see the findings. You say, in your brief at page 12, the PSR found that Stewart acted willfully because the evidence showed that Stewart owned and operated Gyro. I don't see that finding. Did I miss something?
The PSR does not specifically state that, Your Honor.
Okay. Third, the district court found that Stewart's false statement was material. The district court didn't say that. The PSR found, I'm quoting you, that Stewart owned and operated Gyro for the purpose of the offense, which was an extensive mortgage fraud that he perpetrated on lenders, etc. No finding, even in the PSR, of materiality. Arguments aplenty about why it is material, but nobody ever made the finding.
The district court made the global finding, Your Honor, and that's the government's position.
Your position is that if the district judge says it's perjury, that's the end of the discussion, right?
Well, there does have to be a record for it, and in this case there was a record for it by explicitly adopting.
So how do you reconcile that with Dunnigan, Seward, and Johnson?
Well, of course, in Dunnigan, they didn't reverse on that ground.
Because I believe it's harmless error, Your Honor.
So you'd agree that there was error here?
I would not agree that there's error here, Your Honor. It's our position.
What you ought to say is that the judge should have said more, but it's harmless because it's obvious that this was perjury. That's what you ought to say.
In any event, it is harmless.
There's nothing to Dunnigan to suggest that is impermissible.
It was harmless error in not making the precise findings.
Okay, what we have in Dunnigan as sufficient is the following statement. The court finds that the defendant was untruthful at trial with respect to material matters in this case by virtue of her failure to give truthful testimony on material matters, so we've got truthful or false and material, that were designed to substantially affect the outcome of the case. We therefore have willful. Okay? we've got way more explicit findings. It's not quite phrased the right way, but it's close enough for the Supreme Court, obviously. Here we don't have anything except the bottom line conclusion.
We have the bottom line conclusion. We have, Your Honor is correct. The judge did not use the specific elements of perjury, but clearly pointed to the PSR. And in any event, Your Honor, it was harmless error. It was harmless in not making the precise findings given the ample evidence before the court, Your Honor.
Of course, what Donegan says is an accused may give inaccurate testimony due to confusion, mistake, or faulty memory. That's the concern why you want the judge to find willful and so on. But is there any indication here of confusion, mistake, or faulty memory?
No, there's not, Your Honor. I mean, at the sentencing hearing, one of the documents the government...
Does the defense argue that he was confused? Maybe he's demented or something?
I believe the defense in their papers did make that argument, and the judge acknowledged, I believe, reading
is
those...
Is he very old or something?
No, I believe Mr. Stewart was, at the time, in his mid-40s. That's my recollection. Mm-hmm. So... Based on the record, there was ample evidence that the error, if there was error, and we do not concede there was, that it was, in fact, harmless, Your Honor. It was clear that Mr. Stewart lied to the grand jury, that he was not an officer or employee of Gyra. The government, at the time of sentencing, showed the court a HUD-1 statement in which he had represented that he was, the secretary-treasurer of the company in selling a property. His testimony was willful. It was not by confusion or mistake because he had signed, in fact, those documents. And finally, it was material. Mr. Stewart's testimony, it was clear from the evidence provided by the government at the sentencing that Gyra was a significant part of the fraud and that at least $164,000.
Is that in your memo, the sentencing memo? Do you set out why the Gyra connection is important to the investigation?
I don't believe that the government did, Your Honor.
Could you just explain to me why you didn't even address Seward or Johnson, our decisions in this case relied upon by the defense in your brief?
Well, it's our position that at the least this is harmless error, Your Honor, and that
that assumes error, which you are unwilling to assume.
Correct, Your
right?
Honor.
So why not address our decisions squarely on point relied upon by the defense?
We, in this case, didn't believe those two, believe that the district court's findings were sufficient and that those two particular decisions we...
Let me read you what was said by the district judge in Johnson. Despite everything the defendant Mr. White said about being high and doing all this, he wasn't high when he testified. He knew exactly what he was saying when he testified, and he was committing perjury. And I think, I'm misreading from a different case where we said that was good enough. Sorry. Let's take a look at McGiffin. I thought your testimony was riddled with inaccuracies and lies. Not good enough, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
I don't have a. We certainly could address those two cases if the court would like us to. But in any event, Your Honor, in this case, even if the judge's findings weren't sufficiently priced, there is the harmless. This was harmless error in this case, Your Honor. Your Honor, and furthermore, the district court sentence of Mr. Stewart was reasonable. It was a sentence at the low end of the guideline range, and the district court, as shown in the transcript, did follow the procedures set out by this court. The district court provided both sides the opportunity to address both the guideline range and the 3553 factors, and after having heard from both parties, accurately calculated both the offense level and the criminal history category, and then the court set out its reasons, primarily focusing on the massive nature of the mortgage fraud here. The district court then imposed a low end of the guideline range sentence. Your Honors, the government respectfully requests that this court affirm the district court's sentence. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Eden. Mr. Christensen, anything further?
Just briefly, Your Honor. As far as adopting the pre-sentence report, McGiffin addresses that. That can't be simply adopted as and substitute for district court findings. The pre-sentence reports in general always lay out the language of the guideline.
One of our cases, United States versus Savage, a case in which the judge failed to discuss the issues of materiality or specific intent, we said that the district court's findings were regrettably slim, but the error is harmless. So do you agree that harmless error is applicable to these cases?
Oh, of course, Your Honor. This court has held many times that harmless error applies to this. And in Seward...
Why isn't this a harmless error case? What do you think could have been the mistake he made?
The argument made...
He was confused or faulty memory or what?
The argument was made that although he said it at the grand jury, and I know my time is up, but I'll answer the question,
he wasn't... I wouldn't ask the question if I wanted to cut off your answer.
Thank you, Your Honor. That he was not the president or an officer of the corporation. And the government showed evidence that he had signed as president at one point on a bank account. He brought in evidence from the Secretary of State's office showing that other individuals were either president, Secretary of State, other officers with each one of the companies in question.
Oh, was in prison?
One of them was in prison. There were four others.
A couple of years or something while he was
Right. The confusion comes in. I believe it was unrelated to this case, but that's where the confusion comes in, is that the record kind of balances out about whether he actually thought he was an officer or if he was just an independent contractor, which he submitted to the grand jury. So unless the court has further questions, I ask the court to remand for resentencing.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Ms. Christensen and the defender, your defender.
Yeah.
So we thank the defenders and we thank Mr. Eden.